Пуст, они подойдут ко мне. Do you understand what I just said? Unless you speak Russian, you would never be able to understand the words, let the little children come to me. Jesus wants to speak to all children in every land, and your church's Sunday school can help. For just $5 per book, your students can adopt an LHF mission project that will provide Bible storybooks to waiting children in other lands. Learn more at lhfmissions.org/children.
You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
We have another installment in our relatively new Leading Ladies series. And I love this series of episodes. I'm so excited for all the guests that we have lined up in future episodes for this series. And today we have another leading lady, fellow Lutheran lady. But before we get to our guest, Rachel, this is still kind of new. So can you recap what this series is and why we decided to add yet another series to our episode?
Yes. Well, as you know, we do lots of different kinds of interviews on this podcast. We have our conversations with creatives. We have our one question interviews where we talk with subject matter experts about their specific field. I know there's at least one or two others that, we have mother daughter. That's a newish one for us where we talk to a mother and a daughter at the same time. But there was a sort of gaping hole that we wanted to fill by focusing on women in sort of distinct leadership roles in the church and in the world. And so the Leading Ladies interview series was born. Our first guest, of course, was Teresa Todd, who is wife to Chaplain Gregory Todd, who is the chief of chaplains of the U.S. Navy. That was a wonderful conversation. We will link to that in the show notes. We are really thrilled, though, to introduce our guest today. And so, Sarah, who is leading lady number two in our series?
Yes, leading lady number two is Elizabeth Pittman, Director of Public Relations at Concordia Publishing House. Thanks for joining us today, Elizabeth.
I'm glad to be here, though I think that you might have sent the invitation to the wrong person.
No, you were exactly who we wanted for this.
Exactly. And in fact, dear listeners out there, Elizabeth Pittman has been on our list of people we want to interview from the very earliest days of this podcast. So we finally have found a spot to have her on, and we're really, really glad for that.
I'm thrilled to be here. It's been fun to listen to this podcast over the years since you started. So I'm glad to be here. And it's a little unnerving to be on this side of the microphone, I have to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, you host your own podcast, right?
I host the Concordia Publishing House podcast. So usually I'm the one working up the questions and just sitting back. So
okay,
I guess let the Inquisition begin.
Yeah, it is very unnerving to be on the other side of the mic. Thank you for being willing to let us sit here and grill you with all these super in-depth questions about leadership.
And I'm looking forward to it because maybe it's just partly the nature of your job in public relations, but I don't feel like I really know you. I have heard your name through the years, but I feel like maybe you're always like putting the light on something else in your role as opposed to putting the light on yourself.
That is true. Mm-hmm.
And so sounds like maybe you're very effective in that way.
That's my favorite place to be.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm very curious, though, to actually learn more about you because I've interacted with you through the years in a number of different ways, but never in a way that I feel like I've been able to actually get to know you. So today's my big chance.
Oh, boy. See, now I'm starting to sweat because I am happiest behind the scenes. It's not about me. I prefer to put the other people out there in front. So this is definitely, you are stretching my comfort zone today.
But okay. I think that's wonderful because how many women are there out there who have these leadership skills but don't like the spotlight and who need to know that there's a role for them. There's a place and an opportunity for them to contribute, even if they aren't in the limelight all the time.
And at the end of the day, it's not about me. It's about the work that we're doing. It's about the things that we're trying to promote for the good. And it's not about me, plain and simple.
Yeah.
And I'm happy there.
Except that's right good. Now, it's all about you. So,
thanks for reminding me, Rachel.
So I'll just start out with hopefully a, I don't know. Well, maybe all the questions, none of the questions will feel softball since everything will require a little stretching, but we really want to know your story. So I'll start with the present. Tell us about the work you do at CPH and how long you've been there and sort of what your experience there has been.
So I'm coming up on my 13th anniversary at CPH. Wow. And my path to get here was really kind of bizarre. And at the time, going through the different steps along my career journey, it never seemed to make sense because it was just so disparate. And then when I got here and got into the role that I am now, the titles changed a little bit over the years, but it was about a year and a half after I came to CPH that public relations was added to my portfolio. All of a sudden, everything clicked. And, you know, with hindsight, you look back and you see how those different steps that seemingly did not make sense, all of a sudden they came together and I'm like, okay, so that's what I was being prepared for. So how I got here, you know, I went to, after college, I went off to law school and I'd always had the political bug. So when I was in high school, former Congressman John Shimkus was my civics teacher as a freshman.
Oh, wow.
His wife was my dad's organist at Holy Cross. And I got the government bug. And so I went on, I was able to work for him when he was county treasurer during my college summers, went to law school, and I realized I wasn't going to practice, but I wanted to go to DC. So I went out to Washington, DC, and the nature of the beast there is that you take, when you're new, you take any open, you take where you can get a foot in the door. Yeah. And so there was a member of Congress from Central Illinois who needed a communications director, and bless him, he gave me the job. Mind you, I was an English and political science major in college. I went to law school. I had no professional communications background, none at all. Like I was so out of my depth with what I was doing, but hey, I was there. He retired and he had been a member of the House Agriculture Committee. So I went to the House Ag Committee again in a press role. And then a position opened up on the House Government Reform Committee where I was able to go into a council position. And in that role, it was in the early days of the faith-based initiative. And so my boss, my subcommittee chairman, was really interested in that. And he wanted to build a record in the congressional record of what faith-based organizations were doing that made them unique and effective and make sure that that was in our congressional record. So my job was to put together a number of hearings. We interviewed these folks. We did a variety of things with that. It was kind of fun asking agencies who had the faith-based offices questions because they really didn't know what they were doing at the time and didn't know how to answer and they had no way of tracking. So it was kind of cool. And then I went from there into a lobbyist position where I represented nonprofit organizations, many of which were faith-based, but they were all serving people. And so there were colleges and rescue missions, at-risk youth homes, and we were helping them get congressional funding to extend their reach and to be able to help serve more people. So all of that's happening. And I met my husband out in Washington, D.C., and we had our first two sons. And somewhere along the way, we realized that we didn't want to raise our sons out in Washington. And so we're like, okay, when an opportunity comes back, we're going to go back to the real world. And so life in the Beltway is not the real world. It's you're in a fishbowl and it's just different. And so the opportunity at CPH came up unexpectedly and one thing led to another. And August of 2011, we moved back here to St. Louis. So it's been kind of fun with public relations here. And I'm starting to filibuster, so feel free to break this up at any point.
We love it when people filibuster during interviews.
Well, it's fun because one of the main parts of my job, there's a lot of different things that go into PR and publicity, all the things you might expect, right? You're sending the press releases, you're trying to schedule, hey, Sarah, we've got somebody for the coffee hour, you should have them on.
Uh-huh.
You know, social media, all sorts of different things. But one piece that I really love about my job is that I get to work closely with our authors. And it's been really fun to get to know all of our different authors. And that was the piece that clicked for me where I realized all these random experiences that I had really put me in a place and set me up for understanding how to help our authors and our corporate relationships kind of navigate, you know, helping them to extend their reach because our authors are out in places that we're not. You know, they need to build up their platform so that they can get their message out to more people. We need to be careful about what we do so that, you know, we're doing the right thing and we're putting the right messages out. So all of that kind of came into play where I'm like, oh, now it makes sense. Now I know why I had those comms jobs. Now I know I was, you know, representing organizations before the Congress. It all kind of coalesced into this role in kind of a cool way.
Did you, as you were making this transition from, well, the Washington bubble to the Lutheran bubble?
There is a Lutheran beltway, but it is not a physical place.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but I'm curious because a lot of people out there would look at that as sort of a almost a step down in terms of status, power, influence. Did you ever have this feeling like, well, I kind of used to be somebody, but I'm not anymore, as you were making this transition?
Honestly, no. And that's not to diminish my time in Washington. I had some amazing experiences and some things that you can't experience anywhere else. And just there's loads of stories like that and things that happened. But we were ready to come back. And like I said, to the real world for the sake of our family. And honestly, you can't substitute grandparents. Mm. And in DC, we were 14 hours away from my family.
Yeah.
From my parents. And it's just different. It's a kind of exhausting living out there. It's a lot of fun, but it's exhausting. And things like being able to participate in weeknight events at church were really difficult based on work schedules and the simple fact of traffic to get there. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of things where it was just tiring. And so to come back, like even now, we've gotten so spoiled where if we have to take more than 20 minutes to get anywhere in St. Louis, it's like, really? I mean,
right. Everywhere really? Is 20 you minutes. It's beautiful.
You want me to go out to Chesterfield? Really?
Yeah.
So it was really nice. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm a pastor's kid. My family, church is important. And I think back when I was daydreaming before I knew what I was going to do with my life, I always thought, you know, I love books. I love to read. You know, is there a way that I could help like merge all of that in a way that helps the mission of the church and does all that? And I'm like, well, CPH would be the natural place, but I don't realistically, at the time, I didn't really realistically see that happening. And it just all kind of worked out where it was just a sense of peace to come back here and be in the real world, to be able to have roots. It was hard to get roots out in Washington because you would get close to people and if they were military connected, they were transferred or, you know, campaign ended and they went back home. And so it was just very, very transient and we didn't want that.
I understand and can relate wholeheartedly to I'm in the middle of a transfer right now, but
oh boy.
Yeah.
But I love that. And I, full disclosure, you girls may not know this, but Elizabeth's boys and my kids ran track together in middle school when we lived in St. Louis. And so we would we would be up against the fences together on Saturday mornings.
Out of St. Charles Lutheran High School.
Yeah. And okay. I gotta say, just looking from the outside, I can totally see why you made the decision that you did. That your boys have had a wonderful opportunity to grow up in community. And you can see that they have really thrived in the life that you guys moved into for them. So I don't want to go too much into that, except to say I do get it. And I'm sure you probably have no regrets whatsoever.
No, I really don't.
So you said you are a pastor's kid. I'm also a pastor's kid and had a fair bit of, I've now lived in St. Louis for 20 years. And when I moved here, it was because I was like, I would like to go somewhere and have some roots. So I understand that. I don't know, what aspect of your life growing up as a pastor's kid, how do you think that played into your formation of who you are now as an adult? Is there any, you don't have to like go into huge detail, but is there any aspect of that that you think really played a connection in that or contributed?
That's a good question. I don't know that I've thought about it so much like in those terms. Church was always a factor. You know, we grew up with the rhythm of when I was in grade school, my dad was pastor at our church, which meant during the school day, he was around in the building. He taught my confirmation class and he went on to other positions. And it was just always kind of rhythm. My mom was teaching Bible class. She was doing her thing. And it was always the example that they set was always just a quiet example. It was never in your face of, you know, that stereotypical strict pastor, you know, with the pastor's kid having to be really, it was none of that. It was just a very quiet example of how to live your life. And I saw how involved my parents were. And somewhere along the way, that just got ingrained with me of this is part of the fabric of who I am. This is our church body. There are things that, you know, we have beautiful theology. It deserves to be shared. And being involved in your local church and the broader church is just, it was just kind of, it was just there. So I don't know that there's any profound answer to that, but it was just something that I watched by example, how my parents did things and approached things. And somewhere along the way, it was like, this is what I want to go do.
Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up in the household that you grew up in? I mean, your dad is Dale Meyer, former speaker of the Lutheran Hour, former seminary president.
I feel like when you say you're a PK, there are PKs and then there are PKs.
Then there's PKs.
And of course, this interview is not about your dad. It's about you.
No.
And he is part of who you are.
He is a big part of who I am, and he's my hero. I love him dearly. If there's a daddy's girl, I claim it proudly. So it's in many cases because of who he was. You know, as a pastor's kid, you're in a fishbowl anyway, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So even if your dad is the local parish pastor, you know, when that was the case, you know, if my parents were gone, somebody was always keeping an eye on me. It might have been the neighbors. It might have been somebody from church, like calling my mom saying, hey, we saw Lizzie flying down Beltway on Saturday. Like, she was driving too fast. You better stop. I mean, people were always watching, right? No joke. That those conversations happened.
Oh, no.
So you always had, and in many ways, that was comforting. You know, you had people who cared about you because they cared about your family. And they viewed, you know, they'll view the pastor and his family as an extension of who they are or as a church, they want to care for you. So that was fine. And like I said, my parents were very reasonable. I never had a curfew. I was, you know, they trust, as long as you earned it and you didn't break it, they trusted you and they helped you when you needed it and you could count on them. And so it was very, you know, idyllic in many ways. There wasn't a lot of drama. There wasn't issues. You know, my sister caused some, you know, sibling stuff every now and then, but
always your sister.
I'm always sure. The sister. Always the younger sister.
Yeah.
So always following you around. But I will say that as dad's career progressed and he went into different places, you know, you started to have more people having opinions about, you know, you start to see people out there talking about your family member and your father. And often, especially, you know, as things went on and as his career was progressing, we're also seeing the rise of social media coming on. And all of a sudden there's blogs and there's more places for people to share their opinions, you know, and to use their keyboard courage. And so there were a lot of times where, you know, you would see these things and you would step back and you're thinking, you know, the things that are being said are painful. They're horrible. They're wrong. And having to navigate that was interesting. And God bless my mother, because she taught me early on, you know, just by example, like you get fired up, right? You see somebody say something flat out wrong about someone that you care about and you want to rage, right? Mm-hmm. Well, newsflash, no one's opinion is ever going to be changed on social media. You know, you're not going to change anyone's mind. It's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I would get so worked up and I would just want to say, I want to go tell this person what's what. And my mom, who would get it, she was right there with me because she was often, dad didn't care. He would not go read things. He didn't read them. He didn't want to hear about them. He did not care. So it was mom and I that were kind of like, did you see? But she also, her example, and she rightly so, it was like, we're going to keep it here among us. We'll vent to each other, but you know, we're not going to go out and engage. We're not going to go chime in on that. It's not going to accomplish anything. It's not going to change anything. We're going to vent. We're going to pray about it and we're going to move on. So that kind of fishbowl was a little bit different, but rarely was I ever thrust into it, except now that you've all outed me.
Elizabeth, you've flown under the radar incredibly well, because it is only just now during this interview that I have learned that you were the daughter of Dale Meyer. So Well done. Well done. Only those who listen to this podcast are going to know your secret is not that.
No, it's I wouldn't change it. My parents, both of them, my mom is a saint. She and my dad are a fabulous team. And I've learned so much from both of them on how to handle things and how to just kind of step back and not. And honestly, I think that helps too with my role now. You see things online and I think people forget, again, back to keyboard courage. People are happy to go say anything about anything. And you've probably experienced this too, Sarah, with people leaving comments on, you know, KFUO social posts. I think they forget that there are real people who are seeing these comments and there are real people who work at the institutions that see these things and internalize it. And it can be hard depending on what's being said. So, and the position is usually like, again, we're not going to change people's minds. We're going to do the right thing, but we're not going to engage. You know, we're not going to take the fight publicly. You know, if there is a real issue to be discussed and a real concern, let's take it in person. Let's have a conversation. Let's have a phone call. Let's deal with it in an Eighth Commandment sort of way so that we're not spreading misinformation and we're helping others. So.
Well, that is something that I've actually admired about you. And I see now, as the mother of several PKs, how that unique environment in which you grow up can really prepare you for certain callings in life, public relations being one of them, where you are very adept in dealing with optics, in dealing with life in the spotlight or helping other people navigate life in the spotlight. And beyond that, just what you said exactly, like not engaging when it's not going to do any good. And so you have that attribute that I think all true publicity and public relations people do. And that is to stop, to breathe. And when people see you, you are cool as a cucumber. And that is a gift that I have seen in you. Cause I know CPH, you guys have had to navigate some controversies in your time. And I think you've done it very, very well.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So PKs out there who are listening, chalk this one up as a potential career field for you because you probably have some giftedness in this area. Mm. you may be different, but I can see as you tell your story, that link between the family situation in which you grew up and the skills that your parents helped you cultivate to sort of survive this unique set of callings that they had and how you are now using those skills to help other people survive a similar set of pressures. Mm-hmm. And it's really beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that.
What are some of the things that you've learned along the way? I mean, you have a very unique career path. And I love hearing about this because I resonate with that like odd kind of way to get to where you are. And you look back and you're like, oh, that's why I had like really random career choices for several years, because now I'm actually using all of it. Like I understand that very deeply. What are some of the things that you've learned along the way that have helped you grow as a leader in a ministry setting? I mean, I know CPH is unique in that because it's a publishing house, the publishing arm of our synod, but still a church related role, a ministry role. What have you learned along the way?
Oh boy. Well, I think one thing is I've always thought it's important to stay curious, you know, keep learning. And it's wonderful because the authors that we work with, I get to learn so much from, but even outside, like I try to read widely. I try to listen to different podcasts and keep learning because it's going to keep you sharp in whatever you do. But in the ministry context, especially at CPH, like there are so many different roles that we have here. And this was actually really cool a week ago. Trevor Sutton, who's one of our authors, he's a pastor up in Michigan. He brought a group of high school students from his church here to St. Louis. And the purpose of the trip, you know, lots of churches will bring students through St. Louis and they'll do all the Lutheran sites. They did some servant events, but one of the main things that he wanted to do is he wanted to expose these students to how you can serve the church in ways that might not be a pastor or a teacher or like a deacon, like a called church worker.
Oh, wow.
And so he wanted to use CPH as an example of you might be interested in technology and IT, or you might be interested in graphic design. You might be interested in marketing, finance, accounting. You can still serve your church in different ways, like here at CPH. And so a lot of it is, you know, when you know your role and you know your lane, you know, I'm not an editor. I'm not over there. I'm not an author. I'm not going to be writing books. I'm not writing curriculum. You know, I'm definitely not in finance. So
same.
We've got people for that. But when you know your role and you trust your coworkers and you trust the others who have those strengths, it all works well. You trust your teammates. And so when you trust the team that you work with, it's really cool and you can have some fun and you know what's happening. So I've learned, ask for help. I'm terrible at asking for help, but if there's something that like I need to figure out, like I don't have to do it all myself. I can ask coworkers like, hey, what's your thought on this? I'm struggling with this. Don't be afraid to ask for help because chances are somebody has already solved your problem and you can get into it and save yourself some time and some angst. So I don't know. That's not the greatest of answers, but it's there you go.
That's an important lesson, whether you're in the church or out of the church or in a sort of ministry organization, that we aren't meant to go it alone.
Right.
We are meant to use our gifts and contribute our gifts, but also to receive the gifts from other people.
Sure.
And that's great in any organizational leadership or family, anywhere you go. And it's really hard sometimes for, I don't know what it is about us as Lutheran women. We're good at giving. We're not good at taking. Maybe I'm being stereotypical there, but.
Well, I think you're right. It's hard to ask for help, especially when you feel like you have to do it all yourself, right? And society tells us that we have to do it. And I think sometimes we don't have to be in a key leadership position to be leading and to be making change. You know, we are every day, no matter if we're at the top of our field or we're just starting out, you know, God's put people and situations in our path. You know, some might be really small, but they can make a huge difference. And if we're open to those, and if we recognize those things, we're going to make a difference. And so I think we need to make sure that we're not saying, oh, I'm just a Lutheran woman. I'm not going to be able to, you know, serve my church, or I'm not going to be able to help make a difference. We sure can. You know, we just have to look for the opportunities that have been put in front of us.
Exactly. Well, and this conversation about not doing it all alone actually leads really well into my next question, which is about family. Because like me, you're actually in a very similar place, I think, in our family journeys, where you've got this kids as teenager. You've been raising three boys while you've been doing all of this. And I know we used to commiserate some about trying to juggle the working mother thing.
Oh, man.
I left that world, but you are still in it. How do you juggle everything?
Depending on the day you ask me, I'm going to say that I'm not.
Yeah.
To be quite honest. You know, it's, every day is different. And when everything, all those different areas of life are in sync and working, it's great because, you know, everything, but that's so fragile, right?
Yes.
You know, and it doesn't take much to completely upend that. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that when there are those times, and they happen, where one area is out of whack, or every area, especially when everything is out of whack, right? And everybody wants a piece of you, and you're the, I only have so many hours in the day, and I actually do need to sleep. Mm. What I've found usually happens with me is all of a sudden I will get tense. I will get anxious. I will start to panic. And then I'll have to catch myself and realize this is what I'm doing. Mm. And I have to say no to something. I may have to back out of something. I may have to take a day off of work, whatever it is. But when I make that decision, I make it with the boys and family as the number one priority. That's the top priority at the end of the day. And never once when I've made that decision, I'll feel guilt about it while I'm typing the email of, hey, I need to take the day off of work tomorrow because da 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 da. As soon as I hit send though, then I'm at peace because I've reordered things according to, frankly, the priority they need to be in. You know, it's family's going to come first. There are days that I'm tired. There are days that I'm cranky with the kids. It happens. It happens to all of us. But I really do try to make sure that I'm giving the family as much time. That's why CPH is great in that we have flex time schedules so we can pick our start and stop time. So I come in early. Some people think I'm nuts, but I'm also a morning person. So I'll come into the office between 6 and 6:30, but it gets me home in time to be there after school. Mm-hmm. So I'm there for the after school, the soccer games, the you name it. I'll be there in the evenings with the kids so that they know that I'm around. So some days it works, some days it's a mess, and some days I just have to ask for forgiveness.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, I love this talk about vocation and how we serve in a variety of vocations throughout our lives. I mean, you've mentioned, not specifically, but like you've mentioned several different ways that you have served or you are serving in a variety of vocations. How have you seen God's faithfulness throughout all of this? I mean, you've been through a lot of different, living in different places and in a lot of different life stages and having big life changes happening. How have you seen God's faithfulness to you and to your family and to your vocations in work as well?
Oh boy, he keeps me going. I'm still vertical every day, yeah. So I'm still getting up and going.
Next question.
Praise God for that. You know, I think when I think about that question, it doesn't always come back. The number one thing that comes to mind is not work related so much. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. Mm-hmm. And so I have a moderately severe case of that. You know, if you're familiar with it, you might have zero symptoms like my cousin does, or you might have a fairly aggressive case spectrum where I'm at. And over the years, while I was trying to work in DC and, you know, just I was still dating my husband, and I'll never forget, we were out on one of an early dates and I said, I've got to tell you something. And so I told him and he's like, yeah, no big deal. I'm like, okay.
All right.
You don't know what you're in for. But over the years, I've more hospitalizations than I can count, more procedures, like all sorts of stuff, right? Lots of pain, lots of different things happening. And I'll say that I'm a walking worst case scenario. You know, mm-hmm. if one of something is normal for a person, I'm going to have five or six or seven. But where I've seen God at work in all of this is that I heal well and I mm-hmm. heal quickly. And I've had more times than I can count where the doctors have said, wow, I mean, that's all God. And I've learned through all of that, you know, let God control things. I'm not in control. I can't go in and fix this. I am at his mercy. There is a plan for this. He's got some, and I'll say that I feel the same way when I was struggling with work decisions or with school stuff or whatever it may be. If I'm feeling like things are beyond my control, I mean, once I remember and remind myself, again, there's that moment of panic, right? You're having that moment of anxiety and you're like, I need to cry for a minute. But once you catch yourself and I remind myself, God's got a plan for this. I don't know what it is, but if I can trust that he's got this handled, I can make it through just about anything. And so whether it's been challenging times at work, and we all have those, right? Where there are seasons where you don't know what's coming your way. You open Twitter and there's 22 notifications. You're like, what just happened? You know, or something more dramatic, whatever it might be, just to remember that there is a plan for this. And with a deep breath and a prayer and, you know, some more deep breaths and some more prayer, you're going to make it through. And there's going to be a reason for it. It's going to work out one way or the other in the way that it's meant to.
Mm-hmm. Besides prayer, which is a truly excellent thing, clearly you must have some strategies or tactics for wading through social media in your role.
Does wine count?
Sort of So what other besides prayer? That one that one is clear and good. What other tactics do you have to be able to
not lose my mind?
Yeah, not lose your mind, and yet not also not just like cut it off and be like, oh, yeah. I'm just not going to do it because that's not an option either. So for you in your situation. So what other tactics do you have that you feel are you've sort of acquired through the years that have allowed you to do this in a reasonably healthy way, it sounds like?
There are those moments where you need the weekend and my husband will, when things are firing up, he'll say, I can see you getting anxious. I can see you internalizing this. Like you need to shut it down because right now you're not pleasant to be around because of what you're reading there. So being able to listen when I hear that can help. It's not always easy, but it's also it's nonstop. People think like, hey, we're going to fire something off at 9 o'clock at night and we're going to want and mm-hmm. so setting some boundaries and when I'm going to look at things and then being able to assess what absolutely requires a response. What do I need to share with someone else on the team? When do I need to go over into my colleague's office and say, have you seen this? And just talk me down for a minute, help me recenter. And then remembering, like putting it all in context, right? So if something particularly nasty is said, stepping back and saying, okay, wait a minute, That post has only had 12 views. They've got 6 people that follow them. I'm not going to lose any sleep over this. So just trying to keep things in perspective, but also knowing when I need to step away from it for a little bit and shut it down, and then come back to it when it's a little bit fresher.
Mm-hmm. So, isn't that so interesting that you can spend, and if you stop to think about it, it's kind of mind boggling. You're right. Somebody just dashed that off at 9 p.m., maybe 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. And you can spend 10 times as much time formulating and deleting a reply.
Yep.
As they spent actually putting the original post up, because you have just invested way more of yourself than they did.
Exactly. And I learned, I had a boss once who made the comment, I'm going to flub exactly how he said it, but the heart of it was, chances are there's something else going on with that person. Mm-hmm. You know, you might just be in the way of when that person reached their breaking point and they needed to vent. Like, get curious about what it, and this helps in my family life and work life too. If somebody was having a bad day and they snap at you, and instead of immediately going, this is all my fault, I'm a horrible person, what did I do wrong that they don't like me and they're mad at me about this? Like, wait a minute, maybe they're not feeling well. Maybe they had a fight with a spouse on the way to work. Maybe there was something else and it just bubbled up and the reaction was bigger than it ordinarily would have been. Mm. So it's trying to step back and think about, okay, let's look at everything that's happening. Is it really what's being said that's the issue here? Or is there something else that has built up and built up to the point where keyboard courage took over and they dropped it out there?
Mm-hmm. Emotional intelligence and leadership.
Yes, that's very, very important.
So obviously there are days when it's all social media firestorms and massive controversies and all of that. But there are no doubt days that are just tons of fun as well. And so I'm curious, what would you consider some of the most fun things that you have gotten to do in your job at CPA?
Well, I will say the fun and encouraging days far outweigh the challenging, rough ones. They'll tend to be the stories that bubble up, right? Because they're dramatic and they're memorable. In my role, we do get to do a lot of fun things. There's a lot of work that happens under the surface that doesn't necessarily, it's not visible. And so people will see the tip of the iceberg. They're like, oh, you're out at this event with Flame, or you're handing out swag at youth gathering. You're doing all these fun, cool things. Like, well, you didn't see the hours of prep and work and everything that went into that.
Right.
And the lack of sleep that comes.
Yep.
There's been a lot of cool things. I loved when we get to do events at our seminaries, you know, getting to hang out with the SEM students. We're gearing up here before too long we always spend some time with the incoming students at orientation on both campuses. Those are always fun. I love hanging out with our authors. I really do. It's so much fun to be, you know, either at an event with them where they're speaking or they're engaging with people and watching how people react and come up to them and talk to them about how their books have impacted their lives. Mm-hmm. I love hosting our podcast because I get to sit and learn at the feet of great people and great scholars in our synod. I'm trying to think of like one like super fun. It is really fun to go to events and this is kind of, not everybody in our building gets to do that, right? But I'm fortunate enough to be able to go out, get out of the Lutheran Beltway, get out of St. Louis, and interact with the real people that we're serving and talk to them and hear what their lives are like, what their ministry contexts are like, you know, what they need, what's exciting them. So that's always really energizing and fun to do. And then to come back and bring those stories back to coworkers here at CPH.
Yeah, it's so energizing. Even as an introvert, it's so energizing to go to these conferences and to get out among the people, because I mean, we do kind of exist in a bit of a Lutheran bubble here in St. Louis. There's just a lot of Lutheran stuff that happens, and we work in these synodical organizations, but just to be out among the people in different contexts, it is just so, it's like a shot in the arm to see people, to talk to them, to hear their stories, to hear how what we do here actually is making a difference for the people out there. Yeah.
And then when my introvert has been taxed to go back to the hotel room at night and just sit in silence.
Yes, exactly.
My husband doesn't understand that. He'll call and he'll say, what are you doing tonight? Or where are you going out to dinner? I'm like, I got dinner at the hotel restaurant and I'm eating it in my room.
Yep.
He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I am people out. Yes. I love them. but I need some silence for a little
bit. Okay, so how does an introvert survive as a public relations person whose job is literally to talk to people? Because I'm also in this kind of space too, so I want to know how you do it.
Well, I try to make sure that I keep white space in my schedule and in my life. Mm. I don't do well. I shouldn't say I don't do well. I can get frazzled if the day is back to back to back to back to back to back.
Yeah.
I need some white space in there to, you know, quiet things down and reset for what's coming next. Or I'll go home and I'll just like stare at the ceiling and my kids are looking at me like, well, had to see you. There are sometimes you can't help it, but it's here in the office, I'll get up and I'll take a walk or I'll go, you know, just sit for a couple minutes and read something that I need to read and just try to reset things. But at conferences and events, I know myself and I know that I'll be happier and I will be better the next day if I get good sleep and I get that time to reset and focus. Yeah. So, but then there are times and I've good friends that I work with. We all get it. And there are times that we just have to say we're peopled out right now. We need a few minutes. So having people around you who understand that definitely helps.
Yeah, having those introvert breaks at conferences is very helpful. Like, I'm just going to go step away and speak to zero people for about 5 minutes and then I'll come back. Yep. Andy, my boss, and I are very good about that. I remember at LWML last summer when we were just like hammered at our booth and he was like, Sarah, do you need an introvert break? Like, go outside for a little bit and don't talk to anybody and then come back because I see that you're starting to just fall over.
That helps me process too. Like if I don't get those minutes, I'm going to forget what I need to remember from the conversation. So having a couple minutes to let it all sink in. Otherwise, I'm going to walk away at the end of the day and go, I know there was something important about X. And for the life of me, it's all a blur. Mm-hmm. So those moments help that all kind of sink into my mind as well.
Yeah.
So you're a leading lady. You are. Have you had opportunities to, I don't know, interact with other young women who are sort of growing into their roles at CPH or at your church or other areas in your life? Have you had any opportunities along those lines to be engaged with them also as a mentor, but maybe not necessarily as formally as that?
I would say not formally.
Okay.
We have a great internship program here at CPH every summer. And nearly every year, there might have been one year last year we didn't, but nearly every year I've had an intern here as a PR intern. And that's always been, with one exception, it's been young women every time.
Okay.
And that's been kind of fun to help, to get to know them and to, you know, I learn from them and I hope they learn a thing or two along the way. So I'm probably not the best at like intentionally teaching. I prefer to just, and I think this is how I was brought up, kind of learn by doing. And you make your mistakes and you make your mistakes where it's safe to make them. And I think that's kind of how I've always operated with our interns. I'm like, I'm going to give you real work to do and we'll talk about it. So that's been really fun over the years. And so we just said goodbye to our 2024 summer interns. I had a great one. She was a Concordia, Nebraska student. Uh-huh. So it's fun when you see those young women come through and you're like, if you're ever back, we'd love to have you back. So
yeah,
that's probably the most direct way that I've done that over the years.
That counts because as you were describing that, I was like, that is exactly the kind of internship experience that I wish I'd had when I was coming up. And the fact that you give that opportunity to so many young people, especially young women. And yeah, let's do the work and talk about it.
Right.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like you'll have real projects to work on and real things to do. And we're going to jump right in and we're not going to wait. So it's always fun to see how those work out.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's a controversial question. You're going to hate this.
Ooh.
Do you have a favorite author that you just love working with? Like a pet author?
That's so unfair.
That's fair. No,
they're all your favorites.
Ask the PR director.
Not a fair question.
This is not supposed to be gotcha journalism, but boy, I was just dying to ask you that.
Wow.
Because I know that your list is full of really cool people, but I was like, you know, I remember my time in publishing. I had one or two favorites. There was the author who remembered all three of my daughter's names.
Would you
and
have
asked
talked about
them
while
would
you were in publishing or only once you were out of publishing? Then
okay,
you
the
would
guy,
announce it.
The guy you, who I got to interview on his sailboat, he will always be a favorite.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I don't know. You don't have to answer that question.
It's like choosing among your kids, right? You love your kids all the same, but different, right?
Yeah, but you love your oldest the most.
Well,
do we have three oldest children here right now?
Yeah.
Hey, sorry, Sarah.
My oldest son would fully agree with you, Aaron. He would say, you're darn right. He's the one we're about to send off to college. And he's like, yeah, no.
I don't know if you guys are going to serve me being...
Yeah.
No,
well, notice I didn't ask you who your least favorite author to work with was.
That's true.
Well, I appreciate that. Because I would have to politely decline that question. No, they're all
see
so
your
much
skills in action.
Yeah.
No comment.
So the question I wish you'd ask me was, I'll answer one. No, they're all so fun and they're all different. And there are some, you're right, that you've built closer relationships over the years because you've worked with them longer, right?
Yeah.
You know, I know that I can banter with Deb Burma and we can hop on a conversation and it's going to be fun and I'm going to leave feeling encouraged. I also know I interviewed Joel Bierman the other day for his new book.
Yes.
And it was awesome. I had so much fun doing it because I learned so much,
right?
You know, and it's, then you've got our Concordia Commentary authors who these seminary professors are smart as all get out, but they can be really funny too, you know, and
yes.
You get to interact with them and you're like, this is hilarious, but it's amazing. So I couldn't pick just one or two or even probably
I'll tell
six.
You what, I will make it up to you by asking a question you do want me to ask.
Okay.
And that is, this is putting you right back in your comfort zone. What does CPH have coming up that you're really excited about?
Oh, wow. So what do we have coming up? Yes. If we were on video, I would show you examples. So we've got coming up later in September for our ladies. Deb Burma is releasing a new devotional. It's called Immeasurably More, 100 Devotions on God's Extravagant Grace. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous book. It's so scripturally saturated, and with Deb's encouraging voice, I think this is going to be a favorite for a lot of people, and it's going to make a great Christmas gift. Allie, we've got Jean Veith's book. We were talking about that before we started recording.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Yes. Yeah, embracing your Lutheran identity. This is really cool because he goes through basically our history as the church and as Lutherans, and he's pulling out stories from the history of the church that we've never really. And unless you've really studied it in depth, you don't know about them. So there's some dramatic stories. There's, you know, fights among German princes and
I love
all of these
story-based
different things.
History.
Yeah. And it's really cool.
I'm looking at this. I saw this book and my eyes went up because I'm a homeschool mom now. And I've got a recent confirmation graduate who's going into her freshman year of high school. And I'm looking at this going, this would be a great follow-up after confirmation.
It's funny that you say that because that's exactly why he wrote this. So he started this. He was teaching, and I believe if I'm remembering our conversation correctly, it was homeschool students, and they were in that post-confirmation era, and it began kind of as a course that he was teaching them to go deeper. And we all know it doesn't stop at confirmation. You need to keep learning about the faith, and that's where this originated from. And so this is going to be great from that for high school students. That's who he started teaching it with, all the way up to all of us, you know, middle age, whatever. So you're exactly right, spot on with that.
So if you're one of those people who is out there tasked with teaching a high school Sunday school class and you're like, I don't even know where to start, this one might be a good one for that.
That might be a good one.
Tricky.
Yeah.
And we've got, what else do we have? We have a new book coming from Chad Lakeys from Lutheran Hour Ministries called How the Light Shines Through, Resilient Witness in Dark Times. He's been speaking on this for quite a while. And this is going to be basically how can we live our witness as Christians today in a way that is welcoming and effective. So it's going to be a really neat resource. I've seen him speak on the topic a number of times to standing room only rooms. And so it's going to be a neat one. Faith Door just released God's Encouraging Word, which is really cool because we've all, and I think every lady listening has had this happen. Something's going on in our lives and we're met with a platitude of something like, oh, God won't give you any more than you can handle, or just be positive, you know, all those types of things. And faith goes through and debunks eight of those common sayings and just shows how they're really hollow and empty and they aren't giving the true comfort that scripture gives. Yeah. And so it's really kind of a nice way to reorient how we're thinking. There's so much coming out this fall. We've got loads. So visit CPH and you'll be able to see everything new.
It's so exciting. Cool to hear you just nerd out and like prove to everybody why you are the perfect person to be in the job that you're in.
Just like pulling the books off your desk. No big deal.
It makes me so happy. You know this, when books come in from the printer or you get an advance, an early copy that comes through and you're like, oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I knew you.
Rachel, you know this. I'm confused. But isn't that wasn't that the best, Rachel, when a new book would come in from the printer?
New book day was amazing. Yes. And you're just like, I remember you when you were just a half-baked proposal. Yes. And here you are, you beautiful thing, ready to go out to the world. It's like you're all grown up
now.
It's amazing. It is very much like motherhood.
Yeah.
Seeing them, shepherding them through their their childhood and adolescence until they're ready to launch. So for people who see you do what you do, thinking here of younger women especially, if there are women who are interested in working in this world of books, especially religious publishing, which is, by the way, amazing, an amazing place to work, what advice would you give for young people coming up who might want to follow in your footsteps?
Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to reach out to people, you know, take a chance and just say, hey, can we talk? I wish I would have, I still feel like I'm waiting to figure out what I'm going to do when I grow up. You know, it's,
me too.
I mean, I'm like, well, when am I going to really know what I'm doing? Like, right. And then I'm looking back, I'm like, if I would have known in college, you know, go ask those questions, go get curious, go find somebody that I can say, hey, can I come spend a day with you? Can you just talk to me through this? Go out there, get curious and just ask questions and be willing to listen and be willing to think outside the box, because things are going to come up where you're like, I never in a million years would have dreamt that I would have been here. But if an opportunity comes, don't be afraid to take it. Don't be afraid to get out there and try something new and, you know, keep people around you that you trust, you know, and if there's a mentor that you want to work with, great, but keep lots of people around you whose counsel you trust and that they can say, you know, I don't know how you might get your foot in the door, but I know someone who does. Let me connect you.
Yeah.
And just be willing to ask those questions so that you don't find yourself like sitting on Capitol Hill going, I'm in this job. Now what do I do? I don't know what I'm doing. You know, just ask. There's always going to be somebody there who's going to be happy to share with you and happy to help you along the way. I'm happy to talk to anybody if they think it's useful. So
yeah, that's great advice because, and I've seen this in my own life, that I just about would never say no.
Mm-hmm.
If someone came up, hey, could you talk to me about this? Hey, could you look at my stuff and offer some feedback? Now, of course, someone did come to me with a 100-page thesis recently at the end of a homeschool term, and I might have said, next time. But, you know, like people out there who are, I don't know, we don't say no. It is an honor to be asked to share your wisdom and to give a bright young person, foot in the door.
And if there's, you know, so we're talking within ministry and within the church, if there's an institution in our church body, be it CPH or one of our colleges or you name it, we've got lots to choose from. If there's something there that you're curious about, just find those dots that you can connect, like find a connection to just start a conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, you start with their website, right? And like, do I know anybody here? What can I find out? And just start building those relationships, because those relationships will bear fruit over time, maybe in the way you expect, maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be that, you know, you find somebody like, well, not right now, but a year down the road, all of a sudden things have changed. Like, hey, we built a relationship with this young woman. She's going to be perfect for this slot. You know, let's call her back. So
for those who are listening who maybe have not fully realized this yet, the Lutheran world is really small.
Yep.
So, even if you don't actually think you have a connection,
you do.
If you start asking the people that you do have connections to in the Lutheran world, you're like, I'm really interested in this. Do you know anybody? I'm trying to figure out a way to, you know, somebody that I can talk with here. Do you know anybody?
Chances are there's going to be those. Mm-hmm. It will probably not be more than 2 degrees of separation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and we are brothers and sisters in Christ, people. Yeah. Like we are a family, even if we don't know it yet.
It's true.
Absolutely. Elizabeth, this has been so fun. We could keep talking for probably another hour, but we probably should wrap it up. So
you probably have things to do because you're busy.
The question as soon as I walk in the door from my middle son is going to be, what's for dinner? Without fail, every day.
Uh-huh. What is for dinner today?
Something with chicken thighs. I don't know what yet. It'll depend on what we have in the house.
Okay.
Sounds delicious.
It'll depend on what combination of sauces and grains we have.
Okay, nice.
Sounds promising. Thank you so much for joining us today, Elizabeth. This has been really fun.
Thank you, Sarah.
Where can our listeners find CPH on the internet?
Come on over to cph.org. You'll find everything you need there. If you listen to podcasts, go search for the Concordia Publishing House podcast. We've got stuff all over to help in many, many ways. So check it out.
Fantastic. And we'll put those links in our show notes too, so they're nice and easy to find for all of our listeners. And ladies, you can join us in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Facebook. You can continue this conversation there as well, and on our Instagram page at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can find all of our podcasts at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on the KFUO radio app or on your favorite podcasting app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.
Teresa Todd, who is wife to Chaplain Gregory Todd, who is the chaplain of the U.S. Navy. That is not his actual title. Chief of Chaplains of the U.S. Navy. It's late in the day here. A little sun touch, apparently.